Hello, I'm Michael. I'm married to Rebecca, and now we and the three children, we come to the 9:15 service. The first reading for today is from the book of Luke, chapter 23, verses 26 to 46. As the soldiers led him away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put a cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A large number of people followed him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. Jesus turned and said to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children. For the time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the childless women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.' And they will say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if people do these things when a tree is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called a skull, they crucified him there, along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he's God's Messiah, the chosen one." The soldiers also came and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the king of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last.
Crying is so terribly tiring. When you shed tears, not over onions or over something that someone has done hilariously, but when you shed the tears that come with grief or from grief, in suffering or in pain, it is all so very tiring. And while sometimes a good cry, whatever that means, can possibly help us to process things, for most of the people, most of the time, you don't actually feel better. You just understand the depths of your pain or the depths of your suffering just that little bit more. Professor Ad Vingerhoutz from the Tilburg University in the Netherlands has written extensively about our capacity to burst into tears in his book, Why Only Humans Weep. And in an interesting observation, he notes that in the sense of producing emotional tears, humans are the only species. All mammals make distress calls, like when an offspring is separated from its mother, but only humans cry. When did you last shed tears? I asked myself that question during this last week, and I couldn't remember the exact last time, but I could remember very distinctly three moments where I shed tears. The first one was the death of my first pet, and I wept for the loss of a true companion. and a true friend. The second was when my eldest daughter had a stroke at the age of 17 in rural Fiji. And she has recovered well, but at that moment I wept out of fear for her life and the injustice of a world that could inflict such an injury. And then when my dad died, I wept as death took a man I loved and took him captive, never to return. Now, no doubt, as I recount those stories, I find myself in good company. Many of you will have had moments like these, or other moments of significance for you, where you have shed tears, just like those women on the road following Jesus. My tears, their tears, your tears are all an indication that all is not right in the world. Even Jesus, the greatest and most powerful human ever to have lived, even Jesus cried. And his tears, shed in response to the death of a precious friend, were an indication that all was not right in the world. He turned up at the home of a friend, and it says he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And then the Bible takes us deep into the complexity of Jesus' humanity at that very point with just two simple words. Jesus wept. Now, Professor Vingerhutz notes that even though we get physically and emotionally more capable as we mature, that grown-ups never quite age out of the occasional bout of helplessness. He says, crying signals to yourself and other people that there is some important problem that is at least temporarily beyond your ability to cope. As we age, he says, we also start crying more, not only because of our own distress, but also because of the distress and suffering of others. Even when you weep alone, you are showing yourself things have got really bad. Wouldn't it be great to live in a world where there was no tears, no crying, no mourning? I wonder if you can imagine what that would be like. Can you imagine a place where there is never any loss of relationship? Can you imagine a place, a world where there is never any injury or suffering or emotional damage inflicted upon you by another person? Can you imagine a world where there is no death and therefore no mourning? Can you imagine a world where the tears have dried up because they are no longer necessary? Because all that inflicts pain is gone. Now, if I'm very honest with you, I can only imagine that such a world exists in one way. And it's without me. It's actually without me being here. For I am and have been the cause of so many tears. An ill-spoken word to a tender-hearted child. An unfair or forgetful comment to a precious friend. An injury inflicted by selfish pursuit. I've been the cause of so many tears, and a world without me would be a world with less tears. But of course, you'd still be here. And I suspect you can be just like me, an inflictor of tears. And so if I'm honest, I can only imagine this world without tears existing in one way, and that is without any of us. Our problem here is not what the world does to us. The problem of life is not what we're made to do by the world. No, rather, Our problem here is our natural propensity to pursue what we want, even if it costs others, even their tears. Our problem here is our propensity to pursue our own good rather than the good of others, even if it costs them their tears. We are the ones who cause distress and suffering for each other and make things bad, sometimes in big ways, sometimes in small ways. But if you're honest with yourself, you will say today that to achieve a world without tears, we don't just need to change the world. We need to be changed. And so the question is this all a pipe dream? Is there someone powerful enough to change me so I might be relieved of the burden of tears forever? Is there someone powerful enough to change us so we might be relieved of the burden of tears forever?
Hi, and I'm Hamish, and I'll now read from Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 to 8. Then I saw a new heaven and new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They'll be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He'll wipe every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." He who has seated on the throne said, "I am making everything new." Then he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I'll give water without cost from the spring of water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I'll be their God, and they'll be my children. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars, they'll be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is a second death."
So is there someone powerful enough to change me and you so we might be relieved of the burden of tears forever? Or is it just a pipe dream? Is there actually genuinely the possibility of change in the world and for the world? We'll be glad that you're here, because Good Friday is so much more than just a public holiday. A Good Friday is so much more than just a religious festival. It's so much more than an opportunity to eat all 9 of those small Woolworths hot cross buns yourself and a kilo of chocolate. Now, on Good Friday, there's an announcement. And here it is. This world of tears will come to an end. Indeed, God has a plan, and it was captured in that second Bible reading that we just had. His plan is to do away with this world that inflicts pain and causes tears, and replace it with a new heaven and a new earth. Indeed, that picture of it coming down out of heaven there in Revelation 21 is completed with these words in verse 3. A loud voice from the throne comes and says, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God, and he will wipe away every tear from their eyes." What we have here is a picture of the future. It's a picture of perfection and is a picture of things that are to come. And we know that it is perfect because there are no tears. God has removed everything that can cause our tears. The current world, the old order, will pass away. It will be no more, and instead everything will be new. And so he goes on, he says in verse 5, I am making everything new. Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, it is done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, to the thirsty. I'll start again.
So from verse 5, he says, I'm making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this. So here is God's plan. For those who are victorious, for those who triumph over all of this, for those who conquer and can follow him, there will indeed be a place of perfection that is yours. And all we need to do is to be certain that we are among the victorious. And so who are the victorious? Well, verse 8 helps us. It says there, the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars will be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur, and this is the second death. Friends, verse 8 helps us because it makes something clear. I am not among the victorious. Because verse 8, that's me there. I've told lies. I've lacked faith. I've worshipped things rather than the maker of things. And my guess is that you can find yourself in verse 8 too. Our biggest problem is not that we cause tears. Now that just points to our biggest problem. Our biggest problem is that we are out of step with God. We're out of step with his world. And we ignore the life that he has designed us to live. So is verse 8 all that is left for me and you if this is us? Well, the news of Good Friday is absolutely not. And for God's love towards you and his pursuit of you, his generosity to you is overwhelmingly kind. And he has made a way for you to be victorious, to overcome your failings and be changed, to overcome yourself as an inflictor of tears and to become a child of God. And that way is Jesus. Now, Jesus was not a sideshow performer like you might find at the Royal Easter Show. He wasn't simply an entertainer. His miracles and his wonders and signs were just that, signs that indicated the authority with which he spoke, signs that indicate that when Jesus speaks, we should listen. And here is what Jesus came to say. There is a wrong way to do life, and you've embraced it. It's why you cause tears. And of course, this life you have and live and do, it may look delightful, it may stimulate you and intrigue you, and it may feel full and feel so real, but it's a life scattered with grief and tears because of who you really are deep down. Grief and tears, both yours and inflicted by you. It may feel full and real, but it's damaging permanently. So Jesus says to every person, the path you've chosen is impoverished and empty and disastrous. And if you follow your own path, you've chosen a path that leads to death. But he says there is another path, a path of forgiveness and hope and love and life. Jesus said of this path, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. Follow me, he said, and you will have this life. Indeed, God looked upon our world and his heart broke for us. He longed to be in friendship with you and with me. He longs to call us his children and welcome us into this new life that he is preparing for all who will follow him. And so he has opened the way to this life through the death of Jesus. And what verse 8 says we deserve, Jesus instead took for us. He died the death that conquered death for you. God the Son. He walked up that Golgotha road to the cross, giving himself to God the Father, even unto death. And he took upon his shoulders all our tear-inducing actions and more, all that we have ever done wrong, and the punishment that we deserve, the death we deserved for all those things. And he bore it for us, instead of us, that we might become children of God. He did it for me, and he did it for you. And if he didn't do that, where would we be? Enjoying life, sure, but the wrong life, in the wrong way. Enjoying a life characterized by tears and a life that will end in tears. But to all who come to Jesus, to all who trust in Jesus, to all who accept Jesus as Lord and King, he gives the right to be called children of God. And as his children, he empowers us to live not as tear makers, but as life givers. Oh, you may still cause grief, and you may still experience grief when you trust in Jesus, but only for a little while. Because this is the promise that God makes to you. That a day is coming when he will make everything new, including you, and he will wipe away every tear in your eyes, and there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things will have passed away. Now, sadly, many people are happier clinging to what they have. Many people are happier clinging to what they can see. Many people are happier clinging to what they know, despite this very good thing that Jesus is offering. What about you? This is the glorious message of Good Friday, that God himself has dealt with our internal problem through the death of Jesus that conquered death, that he has brought victory over sin for us, that he's brought victory over sadness for us, that he's brought victory over tears for us forever. He has made us victorious as we trust Christ. You see, the Christian faith is not about what you can do for God. You can never do enough to be victorious. It's all about what God has done for you in changing you. It's all about what God has done for you by sending Jesus to change you through the cross and to drive that change by the Spirit and to then welcome you into life everlasting for eternity. There's no need to imagine a life without tears for all those who trust in Christ. There is a place, and it is forever. And in that place, we will sing perhaps those same words that Eliot started our time together with from Isaiah 25. Surely, this is our God. We trusted him, and he saved us. This is the Lord. We trusted him. Let us rejoice and be glad in his salvation. Will you be there? Will you be there? Amen.